Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. So the next morning, you know, and so he sobs and sobs, and his mother embraces him, and finally goes to sleep. And in the morning, she tells him, the way to find, the way to escape hell is to go to this particular shrine and to worship, essentially, Tenjin. You should chant. And so he just takes this on with a passion. He goes to this temple all the time. He chants the Tenjin chant, and he's becomes a real devotee for a time. Then he and his brother are playing around with doing archery, and he accidentally, no, it was, he's by himself playing around with bows and arrows, and he accidentally lets an arrow fly right through the eye of his brother's painting, kind of a poster of this great archer and he feels so, oh my God, his brother's going to take him apart, and not to mention his parents. And so he prays to Tenjin, just don't let anybody find out about this. And but sure enough, his brother comes home, goes running to mom and dad. That disappointed mom calms everybody down. But Hakuin thinks, his faith is slipping now. If you can't even keep this from my brother, Tenjin, how are you going to keep me out of hell? So he moves on from that to his mother says, well, you should try Kuan Yin, Bodhisattva. And so he tries Kuan Yin for a while and really chants probably the same, well, we don't have it anymore in this book, but I think it's chapter 24 of the Lotus Sutra. And that didn't seem to help. He was starting to slip. And then he saw this performance. This is so fun. What must have gone on in those days? I'd really love to find out more about Japanese history and the sort of different phases of Buddhist history. But there was a traveling monk who could take a plowshare, heat it up, and then they strapped the plowshare to his arms, and he could stand it because of his concentration, I guess. And then he had a cauldron, a burning cauldron, put it over his head, and he was just fine. He was calm. But that changed Hakuin's view. He said, well, this is what I need to do. He's okay with some heat. And so he decides he's going to become a monk. And so he enters the order, the Zen order. And he, you know, that then he gets a Zen education. Some of these other ideas fall away. But it gives you a sense of just how passionate he is, and also, I would argue, how honest he is. You know, this isn't working for me. I've got to try something else. At 24, he had an awakening experience. He heard, famously heard the sound of the temple bell. And he was sure it was the greatest awakening that ever had been, that had ever happened in the history of the world. And so he announced that and kept practicing, and then noticed that it wore off, that feeling wore off. And again, he was honest about it, you know, and it really sent him into a kind of a spin. What he realized was he couldn't keep that tranquil mind in daily life. Sound familiar? So he practiced more day and night, and so much so that he got what he labeled Zen sickness. He really got ill, and a kind of physical and nervous breakdown, and went, also a kind of famous story, he went to a Taoist hermit, because he tried all the Buddhist stuff, and that didn't work, so he went to a Taoist, and that really helped, and he describes just what kind of practices this hermit gave him to bring him back to health. Then at 42, he really had his great awakening. And kind of almost, I guess you'd call it irony. Ironically, he had it while reading the Lotus Sutra, which he had poo-pooed when he was younger, because his mother, that's his mother's sacred text, the Nichiren text, the Myoho Renge Kyo. And he thought it was, when he really became a Zen man, he thought that was silly. And so he came kind of full circle, and his great realization was that Bodhi mind means to help others. And in his teaching, he stressed the importance of active practice. This was Rinzai Zen that he was practicing. He was very critical of the do-nothing Zen school. Mm. And he was also always honest and curious, interested in all kinds of different arts and incorporating practice into everyday life. As I said before, he was raised modest, you could almost say poor, and he stayed close to his roots. He was called to the big temple when he became well known, and to Myoshenji, and he refused to go. He stayed in the countryside and traveled the countryside talking to commoners, drawing from different traditions, from Confucianism, from Taoism, other Japanese traditions. And this is kind of a song that he wrote, this song of Zazen. And it's kind of a simple song. It doesn't talk about the rigors of Zen so much. It talks about the beauty and the promise of it. And it starts very famously. All beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is all beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. So it's as if we, you and I, are a block of ice. And we don't realize that we are made of water. We just we're just stuck in our ice consciousness. We don't realize that we've been water before, previously. For all we know, we're just ice. I very much appreciate that he uses this metaphor, you know. Ice is kind of solid, stuck, not flowing. And I think of, you know, one of my primary practices is to get the feeling of water, of movement, of flowing. So, you know, I identify myself as Koshin, as a father, as a teacher, as somebody who sells cushions. I have a fixed notion of myself. And this practice really is about dropping that for a time and realizing our fluid nature. That just meets whatever comes. Doesn't try to hold on to anything. You know, whether it's during sitting, just meets the heater comes on and we meet the heater. The chickens start talking to us and we meet that. Or next door, believe me, they will start plowing and the yard machines will come out. And then we meet that. It's just that fluid aspect. It's also true that that aspect just meets joy, just meets sadness, just meets frustration, just meets whatever comes our way. And I think this practice allows us to melt a little bit. More readily and identify with that which comes without such solidity, without always feeling so solid, not without always being trapped by ourselves, by our own concerns. And I think, we have a retreat coming up next week, and there it's possible for a while to really melt and really meet everything that comes. And that's a particular feeling in which we can really feel, oh, I am water too. I am also water. So these two fish were swimming along, two young fish, and they pass an older fish, and the older fish says, "Hey boys, how's the water?" And two young fish just swim on by, just keep swimming. And then after a moment, one of the younger fish says to the other fish, "What the hell is water?" That joke is from a talk that, oh, what's his name, gave. I can't call his name. Oh, well. Anyhow, the joke there is, of course, that the young fish are swimming in this water all the time. They just don't see. Nobody ever identified it as water. It was just the atmosphere then. And the older fish understood that they're swimming in water. And I like that joke because, in a way, I feel like part of our practice is realizing that we are swimming in this world. We aren't just swimming up here in our constructed world. We are actually walking through a glorious world that we often forget, that we often disregard. And not to complicate the water metaphor too much, but I feel as if water has this quality, the water in the ocean, for instance, of just accepting everything. It just accepts whatever is there. Whatever's tossed in the ocean, it takes it. And that sort of water aspect is one that we have as well. We are both solid and flowing at the same time. I should tell you, I'm just going to talk about a little bit of this. Don't worry. I'm not going to go long. I'm just going to talk about the beginning, and then I'll say something at the end. So the next lines here, Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from beings, there is no Buddha. It says we are deeply both. Hakuin there says we are deeply both, both form and emptiness. It's just the same kind of rhythm that the Heart Sutra has. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from beings, there is no Buddha. Apart from water, there is no ice. There is no ice that is not water. So every being has this Buddha nature, has this flowing nature. Absolutely everything. He says, we all have our different selves. A bird has a bird self. Humans have human selves. Dog has a dog self. But each has also a no self. Each has this water, and the water is the same in each of us. So we share that zero nature, and it's the same in a bird as it is within. We have different cultures altogether, bird culture and human culture, but that aspect is the same. The next one, apart from beings, there is no Buddha. I like that one too, because it says there is no Buddha, there is no Buddha nature that is outside of beings. It's just a quality of beings. It's just an aspect of ourselves. There is no Buddha out there floating around. No separate mystical force. It's just an aspect of ourselves, of all of us. And it's even though we don't recognize it, and this is the sort of the shame that he goes into next, even though we're thirsty, we're surrounded by water, it's always here. All we have to do is recognize it. We feel like we're poor, but we're actually rich. We just have to settle enough to feel it, to feel that richness. And then he goes on to praise Zazen, to praise this practice, and in many different ways. And then finally, at the end, after talking about the blessings, if you hear this truth, if you listen to it with a grateful heart, you will gain blessings without end. And if you bear witness to self-nature, the self-nature that is known in nature, and go beyond doctrine, if you do this practice, if you do this practice of Zazen, then going and coming, we are never astray, he says. I feel like that is a real promise of practice. That going or coming, whether going to the world of form or the world of no form, and that going or coming often means that in the old texts, Tathagata or Tathagata. Going or coming. Dying, going to the world of dying, of no self, or coming back to the world of self. We are never astray. In this practice, we have to learn that we are at home in both worlds. Both the world of ourself, of our thinking self, and the world of no self, of just being here without ourself. That we're at home in the world of ice and the world of flowing water. That both of those are our homes, and that we don't feel like we've gone astray in either one. Oh. I really feel that I sometimes say the hope I have for my life is that I will easily come and go between those worlds without any hesitation. And that there will be in some way kind of friendly relations between those two worlds. Mm. With thought that is no thought, singing and dancing are the voice of the law. I think when we know both sides, the law doesn't come from the Buddha or from the great masters, that law is heard in everything we do, in singing and dancing. Boundless and free is the sky of samadhi, bright the full moon of wisdom. Samadhi has this free-flowing aspect in these lines, and I think through this practice we can learn a kind of freedom that is talked about by Hakuin here, that we can move more freely in the world, that we can move more freely into difficult situations, into family situations that may be awkward, into the various minor hells of our lives. Is anything missing now? Hakuin's point is there is nothing missing. Just like Rinzai says, in your manifold activities, what do you lack? When we realize this aspect, we realize that aspect, that in this moment there is nothing missing, there is nothing lacking, that we have everything we need. And that this place is the lotus land, that this fairy body is the Buddha. We do this practice through our body. We have to know what Hakuin's talking about in our body, not just in our minds. It's very much a bodily practice. Will and I were talking about that this morning. Will does, I hope you don't mind, Will. Will does woodworking in junior high school, teaches woodworking, which I love that they teach woodworking in junior high school. I wish, you know, and there are many ways to get into your body as a person. Sports, for instance, I did those when I was growing up. That was wonderful. But also to have that tactile sense of your body growing up, to learn that how much we can learn from our bodies, I think is an important thing. And also we ourselves in this practice, of course, do this this bodily practice. And I think if we, through our bodies, realize both this water and this ice aspect that we have, both Buddha and self, that that we can meet the world, we can be more free as we walk through the world, as we meet our responsibilities. My kids are home this week, and you know, already my daughter wants me to do things with her, and now I'm a block of ice. I got a lot to do. You know, I gotta figure this retreat out, the tenzoing for it, and all kinds of little things. Last night I was there in front of my computer. Can we go for a bike ride? And I just do feel like it's part of my practice to say, yes, we can go for a bike ride. And I mean, part of that is just my responsibility as dad. But it's also, I just want to put that out there, that it is also our practice to move, to meet that human being that's in front of us. And this time I did. I don't always pass that test. But this time I did. I went out there for a bike ride with her at, you know, 7:30. And then I got back to my block. But a little bit different. If we can learn to become water and then freeze again, we can freeze in a different way than we were before. That's our practice. Sorry to have gone on for so long. Thanks.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.